Hi, I'm Thomas Cook. Welcome to Making It and what that means to me.
Episode 5, Making It, Thomas Cook. Wow. The first four were pretty much mind-blowing.
Wait, stop this. You said, wow. I forgot to tell you on episode 1, I was sitting on the ocean on Cape Cod where I grew up as a kid. I was sitting on the water watching the sunrise. And after the blind man I said I met in my first episode or second episode, to think he would never see a sunrise or a sunset. So I woke up really early that morning to watch the sunrise and was blown away because I went back to my mom that morning before I went to school and I said, Mom, I know why people say wow. They say wow because there are no words to express what they feel. So wow means without words. And everyone's trying to own that. Just remember, I came up with that. Without words. There are no words to express what I feel. With a sunset, with a sunrise, with emotions, with heart, with love, sex, you name it. There's no word for it. So thanks for saying well, you just reminded me to go back to that.
Okay, so we're about to jump into the next part of your life, the Sigma Chi Indiana days. But you wanted to back up just for a second and close out the Nashville previous podcast with a quick thought that would transition us into the Indiana world.
Well, I don't want to forget... One of my oldest friends of my life, I met in Nashville. He was doing Fiddler on the Roof. His name is Drew Moore. Hey, Drew. If you're listening, I love you. Drew was a lot younger than me, but there were people in the audience kind of frolicking, and I just wanted to protect him like an older brother. And a matter of fact, I met his mom and dad, and his mother died of cancer, who was an amazing woman. Again, this whole cancer thing comes back and back and back. But Drew was... this amazing young man who said he wanted to be an actor. And a matter of fact, cut to 50 years later, he's doing everything he said he was going to do. So I'm so proud of him. And during that time, my last thing I did in Nashville was I had auditioned and I was in the traveling cast of with Vanderbilt University, a show called Pippin, the musical. Okay, so I had to say that because left Nashville, said, you know what, I'm going to leave show business. I'm going to go to college. It's time to get an education now. I wanted to study psychology, and I wanted to go to college and experience what college was like. When I was in Up With People again, we had gone through a town called Terre Haute, Indiana, which is known as the armpit of the world. Larry Bird, the famous basketball player, and Kurt, what's his name? He won all the Olympic gymnastics things. He went there. But other than that, it smelled like cow manure or the sawmill. When I told my parents I was going to go to school there, my mother says, why, dear? I said, well, I met the Coda family, who was my host family. And if you listen, Codas, I love you, love you, love you, love you. They were my host family, and I loved them. They were so kind and sweet. This town was like out of a movie set from like Back to the Future. It was this small town where everyone knew everybody. Literally, the theater, everything was in this just little farm town. And the people from the Midwest, oh my God, they are the nicest, sweetest, kindest people. And I thought, why not go someplace different? I also, because of psychology, I wanted to study and speaking. I was told that the only place in America to go if you want to be TV, actor, newscaster without an accent is the Midwest. They have no accent. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Well, sort of.
The Midwest has no accent. So that was the other thing. But I went to Terre Haute because I wanted that experience of just kind people. My first day on campus, because I was going to study psychology, I wanted to be a little different. I didn't want to just go to school my freshman year and be like everybody else. And everybody had kind of already known that I had been up with people, that I lived in Nashville, that I was singing, I had done some stuff. I'm not recommending this to anyone, but my freshman year, I chose to fake an English accent the entire semester. Let me repeat that. I actually faked an English accent my entire semester. Because I wanted to see how people were going to treat me. I wanted to see if they'd treat me differently, if they would be nicer. Psychologically, I would write that in my paper to see what they would do. I went through Rush. If anybody knows what Rush is if you want to join a fraternity. They all interview you. They all choose. It's like fraternities. Masons, but it's not a Mason. It's fraternities. So I went through all the fraternities and all of them with an English accent. So I met lots of people like this. So I actually started talking like this the entire semester. And I couldn't stop talking like this. And I even told my parents, I said, you know, my freshman year of college, Mum, I'm going to have this accent and I'm not going to be able to stop talking like this because it's going to get addictive. So all of you that think that Madonna was making it up, she wasn't. When you start talking that way, you just can't stop talking that way. And if Madonna, you're listening, I love you. And you do know I met your brother, Christopher, and I love Christopher. He's a very fine chap. We'll get to Christopher in another episode of LA. So here I am going through college the whole time, speaking with an English accent. And one of the things that I was most loved for in Indiana is I would always scream to the women's dorm because they'd have the windows open in the spring and summer. And I would always yell, hello, love, how are you? And everybody would be like, oh my God, he's so cute. Listen to that accent. So I would do that the whole time. Literally went through all of Rush with an English accent. Every fraternity would ask me questions and I would talk about Hempstead, England, where I knew some family members, I'd make things up. Birmingham, whatever I did, I just blah, 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 blah. And made all this stuff up. Then finally, after that semester, Rush was over, I got bids from all the fraternities, all of them. And they all asked me to be in Pikes, ATO, Sigma News, all these fraternities. And if you're all listening, God bless you all. Love you. So I ended up doing this entire, it was not easy. It was really difficult because not one time not have the accent. So when I called home from the payphones, we did not have cell phones. Back then you had these PIN cards and there was a way you could do fake PIN cards to get free phone calls. And they had this little machine you'd put up to your phone and it would automatically dial your PIN code. So it was fun. It was wonderful. Back to the audition of Pippin. The reason I brought this up too is at the same time of going through Rush in Indiana, Terre Haute, Indiana, again, the armpit of the earth, but I love the place. Do you understand that they were auditioning for the musical Pippin? And I had just left the traveling cast of Pippin from Nashville, a touring company. So I thought, oh my God, this would be wonderful. I'm sure I'll get a part in Pippin in a local college of Indiana State. Actually, you won't believe this. I auditioned, I didn't even get a walk-on role, nothing. And I asked the professor why. I said, I just did a touring company, you know that I travel the world with people, how could I not even get in on the chorus? Of course, in an English fake accent. He said, because Thomas, you would outshine all the other actors. And at that time I was really upset about it, but then I kind of thought, oh, that was very sweet of him to say, but I really wanted to be part of theater. And again, chose to take that direction. And so after Rush, I got bid on all the fraternities and I said, no, you know what? I went to all the Rush parties when they offered me a bid and I went to the homes and I said, hey guys, my name's Thomas Cook. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. Grew up in Cape Cod. I am not from England. I said, the reason why I faked the accent was because I am studying psychology. I'm going to write a paper about this. And I appreciate the bid, but I've decided not to join your fraternity. And I did this with six fraternities. And I told every one of them, I've chosen to start my own fraternity. Wow. Little did I know then how quickly I lost a lot of friends. At that moment, it became war. Nobody liked me. I was the person that was going to compete with them. So I went to the Greek advisor and I said, Shelley, I want to start a fraternity campus. She goes, Thomas, that's so sweet. It's not that easy to start a fraternity. And I said, well, then how does it happen? She goes, well, yes, but it takes time. I said, Shelley, I'm in Terre Haute, Indiana. All I have is time. So when I said all I have is time, she gave me this book, this huge book that has all the fraternities in it. And I went through all the pages. And as I'm going through the pages, I'm slapping through the pages and slapping through the pages. So I actually do all of that, and then I say, okay, this is the one. I picked the page. It was a white cross with a blue shield, and it didn't say anything about Christ or God or Jesus. And I said, oh, I said, this is the one. She goes, wait a minute, you didn't read it. I said, no, I already know. I'll read it, but I already know. She goes, okay, tell me why you want this fraternity. I said, because when I look at this crest and the white cross, it goes up and down, left and right, but together, in the middle, we will all come together. She goes, okay then. They're called Sigma Chi, Thomas. I said, awesome. I can't wait to meet them because I know that fraternity will change my life forever. And I know I'm going to change theirs. But that was it. Oh boy, let me tell you. I walked around campus for a while and actually no one ever talked to me. It was really tough. I was not liked at all. The women would still like me, but nobody, none of the guys would ever look at me. And they, you know, make fun, spit, do things. It was, back then it was bullying before we knew what bullying was. But it didn't matter. I didn't care. I knew I was going to do this. So they sent somebody from national headquarters. And Brian, I'm so glad that you are a Sigma Chi brother, so you yep. get this. The famed acclaim back then is Sigma Chi had John Wayne, David Letterman, Tom Selleck. The list went on and on and on. Brad Pitt. The list went on of all these famous Sigma Chis. They sent a guy named Dick Hester. Dick, have you listening? I love you, baby. Dick Hester was this sweet, quiet, gentle, smart, brilliant, amazing man who later on in the story you'll find out also loved Brian, and everyone that knows him knows that Dick is just this amazing soul.
Yep.
Who ended up later on in my chapters, I'll tell you, he ended up being the head of all of Sigma Chi for the world. But back then he was just like a regional person. So I met Dick and I told him why I wanted to start Sigma Chi, and I told him the story of the White Cross, and he said, all right, Thomas, let the journey begin. He said, what you have to do for the first 6 months, 8 months, is you've got to find people that want to join the fraternity. And I said, yeah, but what do I tell them? He goes, you have to tell them what you think Sigma Chi should be. And we're not going to tell you what that is until we accept you. But you've got to come up with these great young men that have character, that have discipline, that have devotion, that have the heart, spirit, mind, that want to be part of something bigger than themselves. And I'm like, God, that sounds bigger than a church. However, I did know that I said this to him. I said, I want this fraternity to be different than all the other ones I've met. I want there to be black, white, straight, gay. I want there to be a mixture of people that have nothing in common, but when they all come together, they have this amazing voice. And I thought, okay, who is on campus that every fraternity has wanted but never got? Everybody wanted the quarterback of the football team. Nobody could get him. Everybody wanted the wrestlers, the baseball players, all the jocks. Everybody wanted the geniuses that worked in, you know, in all the sports, and the geeks, the theater majors. So I decided to turn my dorm into my fraternity house. And that's where I would rush. That's what they call recruiting, rushing. I took that opportunity to meet people. And I told them that I was from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, the reason why I started a fraternity. Mike Statler was one of my first friends. The reason why he helped me with this, and he was a tremendous friend and a great person that helped me co-founded this fraternity. Michael was from Elkhart, Indiana. He was wearing jeans and a t-shirt. I get in the elevator. I'm wearing a purple suit with purple shoes. Well, burgundy, I shouldn't say purple. I get in the elevator with my Louis Vuitton luggage. This poor guy named Michael, who's blonde, blue-eyed farmer from, you know, Elkhart, Indiana, looks at me like, whoa, dude. He goes, you need to go to your room, take all of those clothes off, put on a pair of jeans, and put a sweatshirt on. If you walk around campus looking like that, you are going to be in so much trouble. So, thank you, Mike Statler. I love you. Went to my room, changed my clothes, changed the shoes, put them in a closet, no pun intended, and I never looked back again on putting those back on. He helped me with the fraternity. I could go on and on and on about this fraternity, but the greatest part of this story was Sigma Chi throughout my entire life now has truly inspired me, and there are thousands, millions of people around the world that Sigma Chi has touched. And being the founding father of a fraternity 35 years later on that campus has produced some of the most amazing men that have come to be fathers, uncles, leaders of companies. And to know that I helped founded that chapter to make it possible to be on that campus is an amazing, wonderful, proud feeling. I go back and visit very often, and I love it because I see these young men that have truly inspired, and they don't all know what it took to really get it there. And so when I do see them, I get to share some of those stories, and they're so grateful and understand what it's like to not be like everybody else. And my inspiration to them is say, listen, it's not about starting another fraternity, but do things in your life that nobody else would try to do. Don't be afraid of being different. Don't be afraid of what people are gonna say. And if it's a job you're looking for, then go for the job. If it's a date and you're looking to date somebody and you think she'd never even look at you, take the risk, who cares? Inspire somebody to be different. So my being different, to end this episode, the greatest part of the quarterbacks in my room. I say, Mike, listen, I want you to join the fraternity. He goes, Thomas, everybody wants me to join the fraternity. He says, because I'm the quarterback. I said, listen, I'm from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. I have not a clue. Do you throw the ball or do you kick the ball? He looked at me, he goes, you don't know what a quarterback does? I said, I swear to God, I sail, I water ski, I was a lifeguard. I have no idea what a quarterback is. He looks at me like, I've never met anybody that doesn't know what a quarterback is. And he says, okay, I'll join. He joined. Well, once you get the quarterback, kind of funny, you get everybody else. So I didn't know back then the quarterback had that much power. I got half the football team. I got the wrestlers. I got all the jocks. Then I got the first gay piano player, Jeff Bowen. I love you if you're listening. I got the piano player that every single football player held in their arms and loved him because he played music. He made them laugh and smile, and they were not afraid that he was gay. And little did I know about myself back then. However, that's another episode. I'll talk to you later.
One rose, 12 different times, shows how much love you have inside. One rose, 12 different days.
If you enjoyed that song and would like to support Thomas Cook's music and ongoing podcast, please visit iTunes, where you can purchase Thomas's album, The Gift of Words and Music. For more information and to book Thomas as a speaker at your next event, please visit thomascookdc.com.